The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Those here in person, those joining us via technology, we are glad that you are here today. We live into the tradition of this religious community gathered for personal spiritual insight, gathered for outward social justice. Welcome and welcome. I feel like these are further back than usual, so I might walk forward more. Lighting the chalice is arguably, because we can argue about everything, the most sacred tradition to Unitarian Universalists. This action we do every Sunday morning. We do it at memorial services. We light the chalice at many of our meetings, at religious education classes, sometimes at our homes, over shared meals. Lighting a chalice is our way of staying connected with our past, with our present, and with our future. It's a sign of freedom and hope, a sign which unites and symbolizes all those who are lighting chalices this morning across the country and around the globe. So let us kindle this flame, recognizing the flames which have been kindled going back to the beginning of this community, to the beginning of our faith. And I'm asking the doulies to come forward and light our chalice. And as such, we're talking about tradition. If you hear me say that word a lot, there's a reason, because that's what I'm talking about. But one of our traditions is to welcome new members. And just so happens that we haven't given you your certificate. So here, Kevin Dooley. And Alex, I don't know, did you get one? You got one. So I was like, I don't have yours. And Sally Hoffman is also here. So yes. So welcome, new members. Welcome, welcome. Please light the chalice. Let us recall as we light this chalice, the flames lit for our dear friends' memorial services, the fire burning bright at long meetings, those centered for our family meals. With that intention, we enter this time and this place of worship. In this congregation, we kindle a second flame each morning, each Sunday, expressing our hope for peace on earth and in our hearts. Today, I want to center that action with some words from the Reverend Dr. Sophia Betancourt, the president of our national organization. Beloveds, I invite you to stop what you are doing if you can sit with me in the depth of this tragedy. How to reconcile the cost of occupation and of war. How to nuance two very real histories of oppression and violence. I'm holding close the words of UN Middle East Peace Envoy Tor Wenonslad, who said, "This is a dangerous precipice, and I appeal to all to pull back from the brink." We as a people of faith can condemn violence against civilians while at the same time engaging the full legacies and histories of oppression that shape such devastating conflict. As a faith tradition, Unitarian Universalists have long worked for peace, and our principles and values call for the global world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. At the same time, we have not engaged the tangled issues surrounding Israel, Palestine, and community since 2018, and our last engagement resulted in severed relationships and deep pain. I pray for the people of Israel and Palestine. I pray for leaders around the globe who must respond to this latest flare of violence and the untenable ethical considerations that abound. I pray for Muslim and Jewish Unitarian Universalists who experience the impact of this long strife acutely. I pray for those of us less likely to know the trauma of unending brutality and harm and not turn away from generational loss, from the devastating realities and the root causes. or from the relentless tragedy of war and occupation. Be gentle with yourselves when you need to be, but do not turn away unless you must. We are one global living family, living tenuously on the same human-impacted earth. Let us center ourselves in justice as we call for peace. Let us now light our lamp. May peace be with us and with all the peoples of the world. Thank you, Dulies. If you would, please rise in body or in spirit, and you can move to the side so people can still see the screen. And if you have a hymnal, it's number 8, to join our voices in song and in memory, Mother Spirit, Father Spirit. If there's anyone who wants to come forward for a story, you can also stay there. Come on forward. Yeah. I'm going to sit down. And if you like, I can't see you. There's an empty row right here. So you can come on forward. How's it going? So the story I have, you may know. You may already know it. You may have heard it. It's about the holiday ham. There are different tellings, different renditions. My mom, when I was talking with her, she said, "No, it's about a roast." It's like, okay, a roast, a ham. And I was trying to think, how could we do this with for our vegetarian friends and neighbors? And she was saying, well, maybe like a squash, like a really big squash. Something that's very large. So the story goes that when we're making our ham for the holidays, and you know it's a story because I don't eat ham, so we're making our ham for the holidays, and we follow our ancestors' tradition. We follow our mother's, maybe our father's, and their parents' tradition. We get the ham out, and we chop off the top and the bottom, and then we put all the spices, and how do you make a ham? What do you do with it? You put juices on it, spices? A glaze, that's it, something, yeah. Cloves, okay, yeah. I'm thinking about a squash, okay, what do you do with that squash? But you cut off both ends, you put the glaze on, the cloves, and you put it in the oven. And someone asked, well, why do you chop off the top and the bottom of the ham, of the roast, of the squash? Why do you do that, right? Why are you cutting that, Tom and Jerry? And who knows that one is? It's like, that's the recipe. Yeah, that's the recipe. That's what my mother always did. That's what her dad always did. We ask them, why do you cut off the top and the bottom? Does anyone know? Do you know why? Does anyone do this in their family? Do you like, oh yeah, you cut off the ends?
Well, you don't want the whole pig.
No, you don't want the whole pig. Yeah, maybe it's too much. And
you don't want to be a pig and eat the whole pig.
Yeah, you don't want to be a pig and eat the whole pig. There's a little play on words there. And what it is that you go back far enough, you're like, oh, I talked to grandma, and grandma said that their oven was too small. And so you had to cut off both ends because otherwise it didn't fit. It had nothing to do with preparing other than there was an oven that was too small. And the story is that sometimes we do traditions out of meaning. Sometimes they have meaning, and sometimes they're just traditions because they're traditions. It's just we've always done it, and we've always done it. So I want to ask quickly if anyone has a tradition they can think about in their family without being mean, right? Right? We want to be kind, but a tradition you're like, we do this and I don't know why, or we do this and it doesn't make sense. Staying kind. Any ideas? You almost make sense. And it may take some time, maybe later today at social hour, you'll be like, oh my gosh, I forgot that we do this and no one else does this. Yeah.
We put little figurines on the table of children, and recently they were old, like from my mom. And recently I purchased some American Indians.
So Anne has pilgrim figures that come out and sit on the table, and she picked recently got some Native Americans to put there to add to it. Yeah.
Well, I used to always put out a nativity. Mm-hmm. So, I had this really expensive, nice nativity, and I put it out just for pretend.
Yeah. So Linda has a nativity set that she always put out, and then realized she doesn't believe in it. Yeah. Well, with these ideas, yeah. One more. Yeah.
My mom's whole family, whenever we're teaching little kids to do the background in school, we always advise them to kick with like the same tone of voice.
So keeping the same tone of voice as someone else and just holding it over, not because it makes you a better swimmer, but just because that's the tone of voice you use when you teach swimming. Well, thank you all. I'm sure we will have many more things that come up through this Sunday, through the weeks. Think about tradition. It's also a time when lots of traditions happen with the holidays coming up, Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas. And let us sing our song. Our children go off to do the tradition.
Go now in peace. May the Spirit of God surround you everywhere you may go.
That's another tradition, is what words we use here. In the hymnal, it says God. For some of us, that's a term that we don't want to say. So our tradition here is to say love. Other congregations have different traditions. Our reading today is from White Teeth by Zadie Smith, a great author. A lot of books about immigrants in England. And this is a story she tells that has maybe some basis in fact, maybe just a story, and that's okay. Around the beginning of this century, the Queen of Thailand was aboard a boat, floating along with her many courtiers, manservants, maids, feet binders, and food tasters, when suddenly the stern hit a wave and the Queen was thrown overboard into the turquoise waters of the Nippon Kai, where, despite her pleas for help, she drowned. For not one person on that boat went to her aid. Now, this mysterious to the outside world, to the Thai, the explanation was immediately clear. Tradition demanded, as it does to this day, that no man or woman may touch the queen. If religion is the opiate of the people, tradition is an even more sinister analgesic, simply because it rarely appears sinister. If religion is a tight band, a throbbing vein, and a needle, tradition is a far homelier concoction, poppy seeds ground into tea, a sweet cocoa drink laced with cocaine, the kind of thing your grandmother might have made. To Samad, as did the people of Thailand, tradition was culture, and culture led to roots, and these were good, these were untainted principles. Now, both of the stories we heard today, actually, both, I guess all three. Well, no, both are based on like late 19th, early 20th century culture. So the story in The Queen of Thailand, the story about the fiddler on the roof, both tales not explicitly factual, but based in history, based in tradition. An example of tradition, I talk about it so much, I want to have a little bit of a definition, and so I'll quote Tevye from Fiddler on the Roof, where he said, "A fiddler on the roof sounds crazy, no? But in our little village of Anatevka, you might say every one of us is a fiddler on the roof, trying to scratch out a pleasant, simple tune without breaking his neck. It isn't easy. You may ask, why do we stay up there if it's so dangerous? We stay because Anatevka is our home. And how do we keep our balance? I can tell you that in one word, tradition." And he goes, tradition, tradition, right? That's the part we know, yeah. "Because of our tradition, we've kept our balance for many, many years. Here in Anatevka, we have traditions for everything. How to eat, how to sleep, even how to wear clothes. For instance, we keep our heads covered and always wear a little prayer shawl. This shows our constant devotion to God. You may ask, how did this tradition start? I'll tell you, I don't know, but it's a tradition. Because of our traditions, everyone knows who he is and what God expects him to do. Tradition. Without our traditions, our lives would be as shaky as a fiddler on the roof." Right? A tradition can be a set of beliefs, a set of actions, stories, information which pass down through the years, and oftentimes through the generations, behaviors which are ingrained over and over again, right? Why do we have practices which are passed down through the ages? Because these happen. We have a couple that we heard, but others happen. If we think about our families, why did this happen? Why is it passed down? Well, because of our traditions, we keep our balance. Doing something over and over again brings a sense of belonging. It brings a sense of connection to something larger than ourselves, something larger than our individual selves. And there are personal, family, and communal customs we all do. If you get up every morning and go to the gym, I'm looking at someone who I know does because I do too. Yeah, we get up every morning and go to the gym. That's a tradition you do every morning. That's a personal tradition. If you get up and you have your cup of coffee or your tea or your crossword, walk the dog, that's a tradition. You do that every day. That can connect you to something bigger than yourself. As a family, we might make sure to eat meals together, to always spend Thanksgiving with other relatives, to give presents on birthdays, traditions. And as a community, we say certain words the same every week for lighting the peace lamp. We do things the same every week. We light our chalice and our peace lamp. Our services look occasionally traditional. They can switch up and change, right? We have social hour every week. Other communities have other traditions. Traditions are communal, they're familial, they're individual practices. Now, part of this is like, what's the point? What's the point of tradition? Why do we do something over and over and over again as a family, as a person, as a community for decades, right? We can do something for decades or for centuries in family lines. Now, I see a couple good reasons. I'm not just gonna be negative. There's a couple really good reasons because they provide a sense of identity. Provides a sense of identity to do something over and over with the community. It passes on cultural heritage. It offers comfort and security. Right? That's why McDonald's does so well outside of the United States. There's comfort there. It's something that you know that you can come back to. It teaches values. Our traditions teach our values. We're going to light the peace lamp because we want peace in our hearts and in the world. And we're going to do that every week to teach that value. It adds to the rhythm of the life. Why do we have church on Sunday morning? Well, it's a tradition. It's easier to plan than if we switched it, but like it adds to the rhythm. Like every Sunday, we're gonna come and recenter for the week ahead. It makes ties between generations. We come here and we remember those who were here before us and those who will come after. Creates lasting memories, all of ways of connecting with ourselves and connecting with something larger than ourselves. And this is family holiday traditions especially help shape our sense of identity and pass on our cultural heritage. I know who I am And I know what family I belong to because I identify with certain aspects of our holiday celebrations. My family always had pizzelles at Christmas time. It's a tradition Italian cookie made by my grandmother. My grandmother's not around anymore, but sometimes we have pizzelles, and it's wonderful. Thinking of her, thinking of the past. My wife's family had Christmas pudding, which I didn't know what it was until we were dating. It's a very English dessert. And it connects her with her family and her ancestors. The holidays we celebrate, even, are part of our tradition, giving us personal and community identity. And doing this helps me know that I'm part of something larger than myself, not just my family, but anyone else who's like, oh, we have pizzelles at Christmas too. We can feel that connection. Like, oh, there's some Italian heritage there somewhere. Yes, okay. Yeah. It's that simple behavior which gives me that opportunity for connecting with someone else, for transcending maybe even my individuality. And I see that as the most important part of tradition. We connect to ourselves, and we connect to something larger than ourselves. So at Thomas Paine, we light this chalice, a ritual which helps bond this congregation as one in a communal activity, but an action that connects us also to the larger world of Unitarian Universalism. We can know that in Main Line, they're lighting their chalice. Oh, in Pottstown, they're lighting their chalice. Oh, in Washington State, in a couple hours, they'll be lighting their chalice, right? It connects us all around the country and across the globe as chalices are lit in Prague, where the writer of our first hymn started a church. We are connected all around here. We also celebrate water communion. We hold a Christmas Eve candlelight service. We observe flower communion. We have our Unitarian Universalist Troubadour service, right, every year. Our traditions keep us balanced. They keep us connected. Okay, great, good, good, sounds good. Yeah, but there's a catch. There's a catch. I was like, oh gosh, Andrew, can't just like, no catch 1 week, just easy. It's good, it's fine. No, there's a catch. Because not all traditions are positive, right? Why are you cutting the ends off the ham? It's not negative, but like that's not positive. There are things which we do, which become habits or traditions and instill less than helpful ideas or ideals. Tradition is a powerful thing. Very, very powerful. And although mainly giving comfort and foundation, it can be a sense of misdirection if heeded without thinking. So from Zadie Smith again, when the Queen of Thailand was aboard a boat floating with her many courtiers, manservants, maids, feet bathers, food tasters, she was thrown overboard and not one person would save her. Because tradition demanded that no one touch the queen. Now, here's where it's the barb comes here against religion. If religion is the opiate of the people, tradition is a more sinister analgesic, simply because it rarely appears sinister. If religion is a tight band, a throbbing vein and a needle, tradition is a far homelier concoction, poppy seeds in the tea, sweet cocoa drink laced with cocaine, the thing your grandmother might have made. Yeah, I hear that barb against religion, and I know the irony of saying that in a religious setting, but the analogy is apt, right? Because tradition is subtle. Tradition is comforting. It provides stability in a sometimes very confusing world. And the story of the Queen of Thailand may be have some basis in fact, may be complete fiction. The story of the cutting the ends off the ham may be complete fiction or may be based in fact, but they both have very important morals. It's really easy to keep on doing something because we've just kept on doing something, right? That's the way it's always been done. Just keep on. That's just the way we do it in a family, in a church community. That's just the way we do it. We always cut the ham because it's tradition. That's part of the recipe handed down for generations. We don't touch the queen because it's forbidden by tradition. Our community lights a chalice. We hold a time for congregational sharing. We end our services with announcements, partly because that's the way we do it and it's worked. We keep doing it. Now, as with all of life, really, not just some of life, all of life, there is no black and white for communal action. Some traditions are grounding and loving for one person, but not for another. In my family of origin, we often woke up really early, and that's relative, of course, too, but we often would wake up early on people's birthdays playing the Beatles' birthday song at like an obscene volume level. So like 6 a.m., it's like, you know, it's your birthday, ba-da-na-na-na-na-na, gonna have a good time. I love that. I absolutely love that. I was like, this is my day. Start this day differently. Everyone's up and like energetic. And it might be surprising, but not everyone likes starting their day early with loud music. Like I actually did not realize that, but I'm learning. Not everyone likes that. So what is very loving for me is less than loving for someone else. Like, it's my birthday. Let me sleep, please, right? And actually, that's a parallel to here. It's a parallel to here. When we have a new member sign, which we celebrated some, when we have a new member sign our book, we ring the bell outside. We celebrate. It's joyous. That's amazing, unless you're standing directly under the bell and you might not be aware of what's happening and loud sounds maybe give you a little anxiety, right? That's no longer a loving celebration. That can be distressing or off-putting. So tradition is powerful. Tradition is good as a shared and repeated actions help us individually, communally connect to ourselves, connect to something larger than ourselves. But repeated actions can be meaningless, repeated just because they have been repeated, or they can be hurtful, done without understanding of the potential impact. So how do we walk that line? How do we walk the line between getting benefit from the community and ritual, but not doing inadvertent harm? I believe this is our religious imperative. This is our religious imperative, is to be mindful in a place where it is often not, right? Is in our individual and our communally repeated actions. When you repeat something a lot, part of the reason you do it is so that you're not mindful, but sometimes it's useful to bring that mindfulness back and say, why am I doing this? Connecting, celebrating that tradition, but also bringing that sense of curiosity and humility of saying, why? Or to what end? And especially, how are others impacted? Now, with any action, especially one which has the potential to have a lot of power, as tradition does, we have to be mindful of our purpose. To what end are we cutting off the ends of the ham? If it's remembering grandma, it's like, that's really cool. If it's just because this is what we did it, that's sort of meaningless. Why are we not touching the queen? Is it to show respect? Okay, that makes sense. Is it to an end that she does not live? Okay, that may be taking it too far. Right? Arguably taking it too far, right? What's the purpose of playing the birthday song really loudly? Is it celebrating? And is that purpose shared with everyone else? Why do we have special desserts at the holidays? What's the purpose of lighting our chalice? What's our purpose in having a Christmas Eve service? Does hosting monthly potlucks support our mission? I'd say yes, but I'm still going to ask. Right? I hope you see that I'm not just aiming for everything as a negative, right? I'm looking at all traditions. For when we have a purpose, when we hold on to that which is positive, life-giving, and love-sustaining, that's what we want. If we're in line with our mission as a person, our mission as a family, our mission as a community, as a church, right? That's what we want to keep that tradition strong. There's a well-known sentence from the Bible, which I think sums it up really well. But test everything. Hold fast to what is good. Right? Test everything. Hold fast to what is good. It's up to us to test the actions we take, the traditions we have, and then hold on to that which is good. My home church, Mainline, I mentioned them before. I point this way. I don't know if it's actually that way, but Mainline, which is nearby. Not that far. Yeah, isn't that? Okay, yeah. I'll get a compass next time, then I'll know which way to point. But Mainline had a tradition when I was growing up that the youth in social hour sold donuts. And it was a great way for us to earn money, connect with other generations, learn about finances. But there was also no mindfulness in what store we were supporting, right? I mean, there wasn't a Whole Foods nearby then. We went to Dunkin' Donuts. There wasn't any mindfulness about encouraging eating food that really wasn't that healthy and really wasn't supporting the planet that much. I mean, Dunkin' Donuts aren't known for their environmental policy. I don't know. And it set up a system where the youth group was not supported internally from the church's finances, from the church's operating budget. Because we earned so much money from selling donuts that we weren't supported, so we supported ourselves, which if you keep going, sets up like, oh, church and youth group. Okay, we're two separate identities, which isn't really great. So the tradition of the youth selling donuts was examined for its purpose and how it was fulfilling that purpose, and it was stopped. I wasn't there when it stopped, but it's interesting how much that like almost meaningless thing, like, oh, that's a loss for me. And that's where we have to be careful. The message, if I boil the message down to one kernel, it's to be mindful and aware of what we're doing. Tradition is powerful. So it does us well to be careful with that power. Tradition is powerful. Rituals can be so powerful that they become idols even, right? That they're more important than the thing that they stand for. If is lighting the chalice the important piece, or is the important part connecting with Unitarian Universalists around the globe? Are the seven principles the crux of our faith? Getting into that bylaw change that's coming up. Is that the crux of our faith? Or is the crux of our faith how we act? Does the loud birthday music create the celebration, or is it secondary to the occasion? Right? I mean, tradition gives us balance. And this is where we have to question. When we question with care. Knowing that I felt pain at the loss of selling donuts. I mean, like, what? Question with care. Tradition supports us. It connects us. So we must be mindful of how we're going to question, right? That's the word meta. It's like being mindful about how you're being mindful, right? Be really meta here. It's like, be aware how others may feel when we ask, is that thing that we do really necessary? These feelings will come up. This is the hard task. This is the hard task of living with faith, living with mindfulness. This is the hard task of doing it step by step. And this is what I'm going to leave us with today. As an individual, as a family, as a community, examine what traditions exist, what you do. Examine, look at the why. Look at the why and the what purpose with mindfulness and care. Maybe let go of something that's not helpful. And most important, hold fast to that which is good. Amen, and blessed be. Let us now join our voices once more in hymn number 301. Touch the earth, reach the sky, and you may rise in body or in spirit.
Touch the earth, reach the sky, walk on shores while spirits fly. Over the ocean, over the land, our faith a quest to understand. Touch the earth, reach the sky, children ask the reasons why. In our lives the answer show, and by our love they learn and grow. Touch the earth, reach the sky, all are born and all shall die. Lies the time left in between to follow a star, to build a dream. Touch the earth, reach the sky. sky. Hug the laughter, feel the cry. May we see where we can give, for this is what it means to live. Touch the earth, reach the sky. Soar with courage ever high. Spirits joining as we fly, to touch the earth, to reach the sky.
Another of our traditions here in many congregations is to open up a time of sharing from deep within us. We call it matters of the heart. It's also called joys and concerns, if you've heard that one, joys and sorrows. It's a time when any concern, any weight on our chest that we must share, we do, that it might be lightened. When any joy or celebration we feel light in our heart, we share so that it might be multiplied.
With that in mind, we can bring this time of sharing to a close by singing Spirit of Life. The words will appear on screen momentarily. And as I am wont to do, in lack of specific direction otherwise, I will always turn to our own Christine Perry. I would love to feature our own singing, given half an opportunity.
Spirit of life, come unto me, sing in my heart all the stirrings of compassion. Blow in the wind, rise in the sea.
I often invite us into a time of prayer after our shared matters of the heart. And today, I invite us to a time of silent prayer, whatever that means for you. If it means I don't know what that word prayer is or I hate it, that's okay. Just a handful of breaths in silence. One more time, let us rise in body or spirit and turn to 131, Love Will Guide Us. We extinguish our chalices as we do a tradition here, remembering that when we put these lights out, these flames continue in our hearts, in our souls, in the dedication we bring to our lives, in the dedication we bring to those lives we touch. With these words from Anne Frank, I can feel the suffering of millions, and yet if I look up into the heavens, I think it will come right, and that this cruelty too will end, and that peace and tranquility will return again. In the meantime, I must uphold my ideals, for perhaps the time will come when I shall be able to carry them out. Amen and blessed be.